looking at how to maximize the resources to hand in a challenging at a time of challenging on the media front, challenges for across the board for revenues and for extracting the most that you can out of limited resources. One of the avenues that Lou's exploring is automating earnings reports. Now, Lou assures us that's not about replacing journalists with robots, and amen to that, but it's about getting the most out of the journalism that the AP does. So on that, and to talk about the digital future for news organizations in general, please join me in welcoming Lou.
Hi, thank you. So we're going to start with a video, if I could just have your attention for a minute there, and then we'll go into the presentation.
Iraqis have been displaced. We will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists to ultimately destroy the terrorist group known as ISIL.
This is how Tom likes to promote movies like that.
Thank you.
So thank you for that. Let me get on here. So, thanks. I brought that to obviously show what the AP does and give you some background, but I think it's a good reminder of what any news agency is doing to cover the news, and a lot of people risking their lives. And I as I've looked at it, I've seen that was shown to our board a couple weeks ago. It's really been an amazing news year for all of us, and it doesn't seem to be stopping. Before I go right into the presentation here, I've got just a few slides I'm going to talk through, and then I think we want a conversation, a lot of questions. I want to thank Maria Ronson, our VP of Asia Sales, who is here over there, who may help me out here as I need it, and Ted Anthony, our news director for Asia, who's sitting right here. So thanks for having me here today. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with all of you and to talk about what all of us probably talk about in our newsrooms all the time, which is the future of journalism and our industry. It's certainly not for the faint of heart these days. While it may not be an all-out collapse as it seemed to be just a few years ago, particularly as many of us watched the U.S. newspaper market and other markets just collapse and disintegrate, to stabilize now. But the fact is, a lot of older media is flat or in revenue decline, and new media and old media are trying to figure out how to succeed for the long haul. I recognize a lot of that view is magnified in the United States, where the media transformation may be more pronounced right now, but it is happening in many other parts of the world and will become even more a reality in the years to come. It'll be faster than we think. I will show you why in a few minutes with some data I'm going to show you today. Meanwhile, there are discussions in newsrooms about how to better capitalize on the social and mobile markets, and how to serve advertisers and corporations who are becoming their own publishers and want to reach the same audiences. No one can afford to ignore these issues, and for any of us who truly value journalism, storytelling, and getting information to people, it is on all of us to figure out how to succeed financially without damaging the core of what we do, without damaging our credibility and our ability to gather and distribute news. So, how do we do that without going mad? I can speak from what we are doing at the AP, as well as what we are seeing with some other customers and our media colleagues. First, some background about me. For better or for worse, my entire career has been about change in media. I entered the business as a newspaper reporter in the 1990s, and very quickly, cable TV news stations proliferated, as did digital operations. Everything I've done at a leadership level in the news business has evolved into change, and has involved change. And as far as I can tell, isn't going to stop anytime soon. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today. And here's some of the reason why. So I realize these numbers are hard to read. The slides do get better. This one I really struggled with. But let me tell you what you're looking at. Is that this is, I know you need to hear me on the mic. This is smartphone users and penetration worldwide over the next several years, from about 2012 to about 2018. And what you'll see up there is that the percent of the population, I think the bottom line number, gets to more than a third on these devices, on smartphones and using these devices. And that's warping everything. And it's happening at a rapid clip. And if you look at the percent of mobile users in using smartphones, you end up at about half in 2018. And then when you look at it by region, you can see this is countries that'll pass 50% of that penetration, which is really when you start to hit tipping points. We've seen this in the United States and elsewhere, and in parts of Europe, as you'll see in a second. But you see where China and Japan and Australia and where they start hitting that trend. And this is what it looks like in the United States and Canada. I looked at this slide, having a 17-year-old son and knowing my own consumption and all our friends. It feels like everybody's on a phone constantly. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I know it relates to our business and the consumption of news and information. And also news and information that gets gathered out there in the public space. User-generated content we're seeing with what you're seeing in the US and Canada and elsewhere is that so many people are reporting information on a constant basis that creates the news. And I know we've seen it here with Occupy and with other things around Asia, but this is really, I think, almost on a daily basis in the United States. I can't think a day that does not go by or a couple hours that don't go by that someone has shot video, tweeted something, posted something that became part of the news report. And then you can see there what it looks like in Europe, which is in a very short time, we passed that 50% rate. Which, by the way, I guess I forgot the most important thing at the top. If you're tweeting this on Twitter, I'm at Lou Ferrara. So if you want to be in my following and help me build that following and my personal brand, as they say, there you go. So here's what we know after you look at those numbers. And look, this is not, I don't feel like today I come to these things that I'm actually telling you a lot that you probably don't know. But it's going to pull it together in a way that I think crystallizes the challenges we're all facing as an industry, which is what we know is this and what we've seen with the penetration of smartphones. It's beyond the phone, there are multiple devices owned. So if you think about households and you get away from just the idea of a phone, if you look at any house, I'll just speak for mine, which is just three people. In our house alone, there are three iPads floating around. There are three mobile phones. There's an Xbox. There's cable TV. And I've got a 17-year-old kid telling me to cut the cord and get rid of cable TV. You don't need that anymore. He says, you need a fatter pipe because I need to play Xbox more. You can imagine how that conversation goes. But you have multiple devices, and people on this are consuming more video than ever before. And we're seeing those numbers just continue to go up. And the competition we all face is not for necessarily me against AFP or Reuters, which is part of the dialogue, but it's really for people's time. When you think about us all being inundated with this news and information and in multiple formats, but video is the number one thing. The fact that in my room I can stream my cable TV on my iPad while I go through Facebook and look at different videos that come through or YouTube, it's just a constant way to get information that wasn't there before. And there's a huge challenge in how we reach that audience. And it used to be if you had, you know, the most exclusive video or the video nobody else had, you'd win the day. It's not always playing out that way anymore. No surprise, we're seeing increased use of social network usage around all of this and the consumption of news through social nets. I was really struck, if any of you saw the other day, Mark Zuckerberg does a Q&A internally at Facebook, and he did one publicly the other day. And one of his quotes, which I really zeroed in on because of how he termed it, it was, you know, the paraphrasing was, he wants to be everybody's personalized newspaper. And he used the term newspaper. My staff thought I was overreacting to this, as staffs tend to do, as any editor in the room knows. But the fact of the matter is, I don't imagine he says a lot of words without knowing exactly what he's saying. And so he's looking at a future newspaper of Facebook. Someone pointed out to me a couple years ago when Facebook, remember they went public and they had problems and they had no mobile strategy. I don't think anyone right now would think that they have no mobile strategy. They turned it around in a year to figure out what they need to do. So the way people are consuming is through Twitter, Facebook, WeChat, all these social networks, and then they're intersecting on their devices. We're seeing more user-generated content, as I mentioned before. What that's meant for us in the newsroom is we have teams of people now who are scouring, and I think every news outlet and news agency is doing this, as far as I can tell, scouring for more UGC content, as it's known. And that's becoming part of our report. The standards we use are we make sure it's real before we put it out, and it's accurate. And we have the rights to put it out. And then the last thing that we know is that there's a slight changing of the definition of news, which is things that we wouldn't have reported on before, we will report on now. And the reason is we know people are talking about it. And I know that irritates some people, and I understand why, and I don't like every story we have to do sometimes. But the fact is, if half the world's talking about it, you can't ignore it. And I think as journalists, we have a responsibility to figure out how we do it well, and we do it to high standards. Some more data related to what I'm talking about. This one here on the left is the, this is US-based now. The earlier numbers were more global. For these figures, I had a tough time getting global, but I was able to get US. I guess I would say is this is all coming in international markets. Pretty much probably on the trend line you saw with the mobile adaptation. So it's the number of smart users, smartphone users in the U.S. You look at the number of Facebook users, it's nearly half. And as I said with Facebook, they now have a total mobile strategy. Instagram, Twitter as well, and the other social nets. And then if you look at the 5 years out, the consumption of digital video, which really captures everything. I mean, all our video consumption, all of us, is pretty much going to be digital in the years ahead. If you look at the Netflix phenomenon, if you look what's happening with Xbox or the cable networks, all of it's going to this different platform. I think it was the New York Times the other day had the story about living room viewing just disappearing. People used to have parties and you'd watch a game or the Oscars or something, and that's disappearing with digital consumption. And this, by the way, is all before I feel like I'm freaking people out seeing some of your faces, but this is before we get to age groups and millennials and these sorts of things, and they're warping these numbers even more and driving them to the point that this is how they're going to consume content. For any of you who have teenagers, I think that's your best microscope into this whole thing. So what it means for us, and by us, I don't just mean the AP, I think it, a lot of the colleagues I talk to at different outlets, and you guys read about it as well, what's going on in media, is this idea we're shifting more resources to video. Some of that is shooting video, but also it's acquisition of video. The idea that, I think the number a couple years ago was that 60 hours of video gets uploaded a minute on YouTube. It's probably like double that now. I haven't looked in a while. You get to a point, there's diminishing returns. It's just a lot of video all the time going up. But if that's happening, how do we access it and how we access it quickly and verify it? Creating more content for the spaces and platforms. I will tell you, the AP, and as far as I know, pretty much every media publisher, no one's figured out the best model for the social nets or Facebook yet. I hear numbers out there. Our colleagues at Huffington Post, for example, I think about a third of their traffic, it's probably even more now, is coming from Facebook, and they've said that publicly. There are other models out there that are really about just driving clicks, 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 because people are looking for the money. I think there's a balance to be done between how do we do that effectively versus not just being clickbait out there. And then innovating the business models. I was talking today with some folks. I'm in deep conversations about everything from automation of content to how sponsored content and marketing gets played into the new space. The shorthand I say is this: when we look out over the horizon of the financial picture for mainstream media, at best it's flat, and in a lot of places it's in decline. Okay, so that's for all of us, or a lot of us in this room. The only place growing in media is sponsored advertising and content marketing, and that's growing at a rapid clip. So if you were to take the journalism out for a second, just look at it purely from a business point of view, all of us would look at that and say, we need to go over there because there's money over there, and that can help fuel us and keep us going. And a lot of journalists are scared to have that conversation, and we just don't have time for that anymore. So we got to figure out a way how to tap the revenue growth that's out there and feed the golden goose of the news that we want to deliver, because it's needed more than ever. It's funny, I was talking to people this morning. I'm coming from a country that's having probably its most restrictive presidency related to the press in a long time. Some have said the most restrictive, and lack of access. So don't get me wrong. We need to push for press freedoms. We need access. We need to cover everything. I'm just telling you, to pay for all that, we got to find new models to do it. We're dedicating more use to user-generated content, as I mentioned, a video. And really our push, and I think all of us are in this boat, is you have to provide material no one else has. The AP really, and I think the agencies all fell into this, not to speak for everyone, but we're all kind of there, that we all covered basically the same thing. And that's changing. Because if we all have the same thing, it's of less value. And I'm going to talk about that more in a minute when I get to the earnings reports. So just a couple things I want to touch on in terms of what's going on among some other places and some customers. So on the left is the New York Times, which many of you probably seen. They started their sponsored content initiative, Time Studio. They've had some very good success with that. In the latest round of earnings, I believe they noted it as an uptick area for their digital advertising, which for the rest of it means they made a little more money on this, and they see growth there. So it seems to be working for them. I think I've talked to some of the folks who are involved there. I've heard them speak, and I think they tell you that they're not done yet. They're still exploring where this goes and how to do it. And then on the right, I have BuzzFeed. For those who don't know, BuzzFeed is a site that has grown in the past couple years out of the United States. It is basically, its original model was, you know, providing buzzworthy information, but also sponsored content that was really clever and smart. And so the folks over there will tell you they have no problem doing sponsored content. They have no problem doing advertiser-based content. And that's how they generate their revenue. They have buzzy material that gains a lot of clicks. And what BuzzFeed is doing now is they're hiring people to cover what we would consider mainstream news around the world. And they're going to be doing that more and more. Their market cap is, or their valuation, I should say, I think is around $2 billion at this point. So they've gone from something to nothing, or nothing to something, I would say, very quickly. And that's in the realm of new media. And on this, and I'll point to it real quick. I have to go away from the mic for a second. But you'll see right here, this one right here, this is, you know, promoted by Capital One. This is a piece of sponsored content. So they're integrating the sponsored content in their main news feeds as well. This, from an AP point of view, some of the things we've been doing. We have our AP mobile app. We are a B2B business overall, business-to-business operation. We have a few B2C areas. We have our AP mobile app. On that, we have had sponsored content, clearly labeled, advertising content. And as well in our Twitter feed, which has like 4 million followers, we do have advertisements that run in there. And when we launched those a year and a half ago, a lot of people in the industry was like, the AP have sold out. We looked at it quite differently. We label it advertising. It is advertising. It's no different than what you get on a lot of social platforms or that you get on TV with a commercial. But we label it. The one in the middle there is from Merck for getting a flu shot. And the one on the right came from Jockey, which was around the World Series. They actually contacted us and said, if the Giants win, we want to run a campaign. So we said, we have no influence over the World Series, but we're happy to take your advertising dollars if we're able to, if they win. And then here I just showed, we're not alone in this. I mean, a lot of people are exploring things. On the left is BBC News, which has their YouTube channel. I was actually surprised. There were two things about this. One, just to show the BBC and everyone is having YouTube channels, different mobile platforms, and different elements of how they're trying to drive revenue. But even the BBC, as big as it is, the number of followers, I think, on this was, or subscribers on their YouTube channel was like 330,000, which I actually thought was quite low when you look at some of the other channels out there. So no one has a silver bullet solution. Everyone's kind of making their way through this. And I put WeChat up. I was talking to some executives the other day from China who use WeChat, and some of the media executives were telling me how they've integrated feeds into WeChat, and they're actually getting traffic from that and doing some innovative things around new ways to consume content via WeChat. So I can take a break here and take a couple questions before I get into this next thing, or I can just continue on. All right. So it was mentioned that it was announced over the summer we were automating some of our content. What we decided to do, I've been talking to a company called Automated Insights, which, out of full disclosure, we recently invested in, the AP invested in. And I started exploring in 2012 whether we could automate some of our content. The theory being that the technology was getting better and that we have a lot of people, when I look at news agencies, there are a lot of people who do things that have always been that way. And one of them is just kind of processing data. So what you're looking at here is actually what I call a structured data file. It's put together by Zacks Investment Research out of Chicago. We partner with them on this. And out of that data, we create a story. In this case, it's about AutoNation and their earnings reports. And what we've been able to do in a very short amount of time in the past 6 months, we went from manually producing about 300 earnings reports with our reporters a quarter to this quarter we'll have about 3,000 earnings reports. And I will grant you for the AP, it's a sweet spot of a marketplace for us in that, you know, in comparison to Reuters or Bloomberg or Dow Jones, I'm not really going after the trader market for financial data. I'm going after the news consumer market for financial data and earnings reports. And what a lot of my customers tell me they want, because this was based on customer feedback, is it's great you guys cover those 300, but I'm out here in Tennessee and I really want the 100 companies that are from Tennessee. If you could give me those 100 companies, I don't have to have as many people here do it, and I'm really strapped for resources right now. And the whole origin of the AP was we were a cost-saving measure for news outlets. That's how we were originally founded. And so by doing this, we're able to provide that. I will tell you, here's what people ask. I'll get ahead of these questions. You probably ask them. We're not eliminating any jobs for this. It's a very low-cost thing to do. What I've done is been able to redeploy people into covering more news. And we were talking about it earlier up here, that I'm able to put people on stories I couldn't put them on before. Because we've all shrunk in media, we have fewer resources. We were beating our heads against the wall and having people do a ton of these. I've probably, you know, the aggregate is a couple full-time positions came out of this because I don't have as many people having to do earnings reports on a daily basis during each quarter. It does not mean we're not covering earnings anymore. We cover all the top companies. And we're going to continue to do that. We've had to make some adjustments. We're going to continue to. And finally, on our automation, our error rate, if you will, because someone has to put in this data, a human is still needed to put in the data somewhere, our error rate is probably this quarter around the 2% zone, meaning someone put in a wrong number somewhere. That is better than the humans. The humans don't like to hear that sometimes. It's better than the humans. And we think that number is only going to go down, because some of these were like little one-off things we have to fix on a permanent basis. But it's been successful, and we're looking at it, doing it more. And so finally, I'll leave you this so we can take questions and talk more. You know, where do we go from here? And I just had three things for everybody that I tell people, especially journalists, when I get asked is, you know, be true, which means there is no more important time for journalists. There is no more important time for accurate information, because there's a lot of bogus information out there. There's a lot of governments, as we know, that don't want things out, including my own. So there are many reasons that we need accurate information, and this is important to get right. Be innovative, be fearless in having the conversations around change in your newsroom. I always tell journalists and editors, you know, it's fine to have the conversation. Doesn't mean we're publishing it. Doesn't mean we're doing it. But let's have the conversation. I'd rather talk to the head of marketing for IBM or advertising for a company than not be in that dialogue, because we have to know what's going on or we're not going to be able to succeed in this race. And then finally, you got to be ruthless. Eliminate what no longer is needed and grow the areas that are. And in our case, we're doing that. We think it's going to be the only way to survive, and I don't think anybody is going to be alone in that. So that's everything. I've probably gone on a little too long here, but I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
I'm going to speak loudly, so I hope you can hear. We're going to open it up to questions.
These are on. You want to do if they need it?
Yeah. I'll just start.
Yeah.
Just dive over here quickly. We'll open it up to questions. Please wait for the microphone to reach you, and when it does, please identify yourself by name and an affiliation. If I may, I'll just kick off by asking you, Lou. A lot of journalists working in traditional outlets are terrified by things like BuzzFeed, and they look at that and they see a dark and dismal future full of sensationalist news. And by the same token, traditional news outlets do need a change, do need to evolve. Does the AP still, as you outline these changes, does it still have a mission to inform? Does it still have a mission to report the boring stuff, for want of a better phrase?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually get asked that a fair amount because, you know, I do oversee business, sports, and entertainment, and some people think I shy more towards the entertainment side sometimes. The answer is yes, we still do the boring stuff, and we still do everything. We consider it of high value, and I think our what we're looking at, though, is a model that in order to do that stuff, you have to create new ways to fund it. And we're going to have to figure this out, and I would rather be in control of that conversation and trying to develop it than not and letting it happen to us. Because I when I see things in media, you know, a lot of times things happen because people let them happen. Nobody did anything about it. Nobody took action. Or the actions they take are muted or held back. So yes, we still have to cover all that, and I can't think of a time where at the AP that the story didn't come first. And I think that's true of AFP and Reuters. I think it's true of a lot of news agencies that you got to put the story first. I worry about some outlets, particularly smaller ones, and that where it's a struggle to do that. But for us, it's going to be covering the news first. I mean, the video you saw shows that. And we don't see that going away, but there is going to be a part of the organization that has to figure out new models and take advantage of it. And BuzzFeed should scare us. It's okay to be scared now and then. We should be scared. My point is, don't be scared and then just be scared. Be scared and say, okay, I got to deal with this. I don't know what's going to happen to BuzzFeed long term. I've had people say, it really is the future. We're all going to get our news from BuzzFeed, and you know, AFP and AP and Reuters all go away. I doubt that's the case. I think BuzzFeed will be around. The example I use is this. There's no offense to BuzzFeed, which is a good AP customer. Look, I'll say this. When I took over entertainment, which is about 6 years ago, the reason AP took on entertainment and consolidated its formats, so we had text, photo, and video all together, and we went headstrong into entertainment, was TMZ was about to eat our lunch. And basically I was told, this is a great job to get, right? Here's entertainment, by the way, TMZ is gonna destroy you unless you figure this out. I was told TMZ would be the only entertainment outlet out there, and we wouldn't survive. TMZ is also a customer, by the way. I just tell you this for disclosure. It's not to boast. It's more disclosure. But the point is, TMZ is still around. They're doing fine. They have a TV show in the States. I think it gets broadcast internationally. I'm sure all of you tune in. And TMZ is still there. But in that time, AP not only survived, CNN has survived with entertainment. Reuters has survived with entertainment. AFP does entertainment. If I look at Daily Variety and how they've reinvigorated that brand under new ownership and new leadership, if I look at The Hollywood Reporter under Janice Min, who's now running Billboard, you know, these things tend to go through iterations, and I think BuzzFeed may scare us, but it shouldn't stop us.
My name's Andrew Wood. I'm a freelance journalist, mainly do finance, mainly do broadcasting. You said about, it's interesting you said about TMZ being a customer and also its a rival. I think we see an awful lot of that in media now. I'm very interested in AP. I believe you're owned basically by many of your customers, American newspapers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you're not supposed to make a profit, or rather you're not supposed to make a profit for shareholders.
Right. We are we're a not-for-profit consortium owned by America's newspapers, predominantly, going back to the dawn of the AP when it was first founded. And the other thing I'll say on that before we get to your question is that I've had people say that must slow you down and make you, must be impossible to get things done. That AP ownership is the same one that said, you know, you should buy into video, you should expand video, which is now makes 50% of our revenues is video and AP television news. They greenlighted acquisitions we've made over time. They greenlighted the AP mobile app. It's interesting that board actually drives the AP and has enabled us to succeed over time. So.
Okay, that preempted my question. It's basically, are your shareholders your enemies? And as newspapers, you know, having a really tough time, do they see you as the enemy? Because, I mean, why should I, you know, if I look in a lot of American newspapers, a lot of America's newspapers around the world, you know, I look at the foreign coverage, it's covered by news agencies. So why should I bother looking on my, you know, Kansas City Herald or whatever news site
right.
to see AP copy from Hong Kong when I can just go straight to the AP website? Surely you'd make more money that way because your customers are going bust. Your customers, your shareholders are going bust.
Not entirely accurate. Because you have to remember, our U.S. customers are not just U.S. newspapers. They're the cable networks, Comcast, Disney, all of which own the U.S. networks, Fox, and so on, News Corp. So, look, in this business, in the agency business, I used to be at a newspaper and TV, and we're always going to have a lot of frenemies out there, right? I mean, I think all of us are in that boat. And it's not just in the business. I mean, this goes on in the worlds we report in, too. I know all of you who are reporters have colleagues and friends in different agencies and things we cover, and it goes back and forth. So I'm not surprised that there are going to be sources of tension as we go through this change. I think the newspapers, you know, what we try to do is provide what they need for their content. Over the past year, we have retrenched our state news operations to feed their needs more than ever before, and we've customized things for them to meet their needs. I'm not going to lie to you, a lot of our customers, the local newspapers in the U.S., are really going to a local-only first, if you will. And you can understand why, because exactly like you're hitting on. That's going to continue probably for a while, and we'll see where it goes. But, you know, for the most part, I have a few folks who are, there are customers that I would say don't like some of the things we do, but I think you can say that of any business. I think for the most part, they're pleased with what we provide as a product. And, you know, hopefully that continues. Whatever you like. Yeah.
Hi, my name's David McIntyre. I'm a photographer, come from a newspaper and magazine background. They say nowadays a lot of people know the news, but they don't know the news. And how do you compete? I mean, you brought it up. How do you compete against your kids' Xbox? I mean, and also, I mean, in entertainment, a lot of people know, like, the last meal a celebrity had, but they don't know that a shopping mall is going in next door to their house.
Yeah, actually, that probably worries me more than anything, because I actually think that phenomenon you're talking about will contribute to the wealth gap issues we're seeing, because people who know more are going to be more informed to do certain things. It contributes to a lot. What you know is important. I think for us, it's a balancing act of providing depth where we need to and skimming where we need to and moving on. We like to think we provide depth where it's needed, whether it be on Syria or Islamic State or Occupy, whatever it may be. And then, look, the story of Brad and Angelina getting married was just a couple paragraphs. You didn't need to say more, right? But it's a... Unfortunately, we don't get to fully define the world we go into and have to provide content to. And I wish I had a better answer than that. But I think there are and there are going to be a huge number of people who aren't as informed as maybe they once were, even though they're inundated with more information than ever before. I think we have one or two more questions.
Hello, Angelina Draper, technology journalist. With regards to UGC content, video specifically, do you now or possibly foresee in the future a model where a certain amount of metadata will be required within the UGC videos for verification? Because at the moment, anybody could send in, but then there's a problem of verifying, and yet there are a lot of tools out there that can
right.
check through the metadata that is available. But a lot of users don't know this.
Yeah, I'd love that, actually, because it's one of the things for us. The answer to your question is, I don't know. I don't know. You know, we've talked to YouTube, we've talked to others about what could be done to give us authenticated content quicker. And I think the approach is generally that's your issue to deal with. That's yours to sort out. And I understand that. There's only so much they want to take on to solve my problems. But I think it's one of the key issues because it would make things a lot easier. You know, when you're dealing with UGC content, you have to get in touch with the person. We go through a strict vetting process, get in touch, get it cleared, get it rights cleared to use it, and then making sure it's accurate. And we've had many situations where we have staff in our bureaus look at the content very closely and compare it to the location it supposedly is. There's one famous story in the AP that was a, I think it was an attack in Syria, and And our staff said, you know, that actually is not accurate because that statue isn't there anymore. But I'd love to have as much detail as possible. But I think, you know, a lot of the best UGC, people aren't thinking about it. They're just putting it out. More people are thinking about it, but people are just shooting a clip and then posting it. And then you have to go back and get it. The Boston bombings, you've seen the Facebook photo that has the bomber walking away. The guy who posted that just happened to post it. He was a runner and didn't realize what he had at the time until a couple of us reached out to him. So I'd love to have more data on all these things, but I think it's going to take time to get there. One more question? Two more questions?
Regards to how you said looking at conversations and that can inspire the way that you look at news. How do you do that, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so we're I think like every news outlet we're going through this now is looking at an aggregation of all the data out there about what's being consumed. You know, what's trending, what are people talking about, and should we be doing more with a particular story? The most recent example I could think of was the song by Lord Royals that got banned by radio stations in San Francisco during the World Series. It was a fun little story. We weren't really doing much with that. It was a trending topic on Twitter, on Google, and us grabbing that and saying, you know, everybody's talking about this. We should do a short item on it. You know, it's very rare you have the instance, but it does happen, that, hey, the choppers are over my house, and I think something's going on here. Those are rare. Those are harder to find, those diamonds, but we go after those too. But for us, we're trying to get more analytics, I think everyone is, to see what people are talking about so we can help inform our report. I think the danger there is making sure we aren't letting it be the only source of information. We still need to use human judgment on covering the news. Do we have time for any more?
I think we're out of time, I'm afraid, but it's been really interesting, really stimulating, and I, for one, want to thank you for sharing some really priceless intelligence with your competitors. So thank you, and
thank you.
Thanks very much for coming to join us today. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much.